Have you ever been in a situation where you have felt like your feelings, your emotions, the things that you go on through life are not being validated by those around you? And how devastating that could be for you and your future? I know exactly how you feel. And I am so excited because I have a very, very special guest. I feel so honored today. You're going to see it in a second. That is going to help us talk about the importance, the life-saving power of emotional validation. So don't go anywhere. Welcome to Living Intentionally, the podcast that empowers driven women to get unstuck and to take their personal and professional lives to the next level. I'm your host, Carmen Benton. I am here to help you create the life you truly desire without burning out. And as a leading expert in living with amplified alignment between your mind, your energy, and your soul purpose, I'll be sharing valuable insights on mindset, energy, self-care, business, and much more. Plus, you get to hear from inspired women who have successfully built businesses and lives that are both meaningful and fulfilling. Join us as we dive into the topic that matter most and uncover the secrets to living intentionally. Welcome to today's episode of Living Intentionally. You are in for a treat because I have Dr. Elaina Fernandez with me today. She's born and raised in a slum in the Dominican Republic. She's a best-selling author, international acclaimed storyteller, and an award-winning mom entrepreneur. Four times TEDx speaker and featured keynote speaker on prestigious stages around the world. She waves the tragedy, trauma, and turmoil she has endured in her own life into her storytelling, inspiring audiences to feel validated in their own pain so that they can feel seen and safe and supported and allow others to do the same. She is best known for her contribution to helping inspiring mom entrepreneurs in turning their painful stories into profitable streams of income. She's an immigrant to the U.S., like I am. She's passionate about diversity, inclusion, and representation, and works as an advisor to global brands and organizations toward equity and social justice. You can see her everywhere. I mean, I can read here for hours, but she's been named and selected by Success Magazine as one of the 125 most impactful leaders worldwide and a top Latina influencer. And you can see her work in Forbes, CNN, Inc. Magazine, The Wall Street Journal, ABC, NBC, CBS, Fox, The Huffington Post, Authority Magazine, Brains Magazine. I mean, I can go for ages. Good Morning America. She's such an inspiration. I am so thrilled to have you here today, Elaina. Thank you and welcome.
Thank you so much, Carmen, for having me. I'm so honored to have this conversation with you. I can't wait to see where it leads.
Oh, my God. So you are the positive mom. And knowing a little bit about your story, it's so amazing that you can embrace all this pain and trauma and turn it into something amazing and positive. But I would like for you to share with the audience a little bit of your story and how you went from, you know, Dominican Republic, coming here, all the pain in the middle, and where you are today.
Oh my goodness. So how long do you have?
For you, I have days.
Thank you so much. Well, thank you, you know, number one, for acknowledging that and for allowing me to speak about it. It's really hard and difficult to share our painful experiences. And yet when we do, we're able to create a connection with others. And that's something that it took me a long time and a lot of work to figure out. And so the first thing I'm going to say is the things that I share from a place of scars and not wounds. Because sometimes it's easy to see someone sharing what they went through and blaming ourselves or maybe judging ourselves and saying, well, I could never do that, or I would probably freeze if I had to say this thing. So we share our scars nor our wounds, and we have to share our wounds in a safe space. Mm-hmm. And so thank you for providing this outlet. And, you know, as a child, I remember being 5 years old when I first thought for the first time, this world is better off without me. And that was a theme all throughout my childhood, feeling like my life was a mistake, that I really didn't have a purpose to be alive. And that has been the, you know, how the trajectory started. It probably started even before I was 5 years old, but I remember at 5 years old, looking around and seeing, how do I end this? How do I end this pain? And so that, you know, fast forward to when I was 7 years old, and you know this story, I got a glimpse of hope. And it was because I lived in extreme poverty and everything was painful, I thought. I saw other children that could be children, but I felt like everything was rigged against me. And I was a little girl, but those circumstances will do that to you, especially if you don't live in a safe and healthy environment. And so one of my favorite places was the landfill, where I could find toys and trinkets and just be adventurous and creative, because there was so much to play with. You know what they say, that somebody else's trash is your treasure. Mm-hmm. So I found so many treasures there. And that was the first time that I felt a glimpse of hope, because I saw this magazine that was written in another language, spoiler alert, English. Yes. And in this magazine, I saw everything that I ever wanted for myself. You know, as a child, we're self-centered. We only think about ourselves. And so I was thinking, oh my goodness, you know, if I learn this language, and I said that to my little brother, who was five, but he's a genius, so he got it. And I said, maybe if we learn this language, we could have this life. Mm-hmm. And he got it, right? And so I started a journey of my first entrepreneurial journey of finding ways to make money to pay for these English classes. And then that escalated to, I was able to move out of the slum to go to college. And there I found like a renewal that maybe I was meant for something more. Maybe I could really grow, and having all these crazy dreams, like, I want to be a millionaire. I want to travel the world. You know, when you feel safe, and that's, you know, where validation starts to come in. When you feel safe, you grow. Mm-hmm. You are allowed to dream. You allow yourself to dream. You give yourself permission to see a different space of where you are. And so that is what, you know, the landfill provided for me, that safety, but that's also what moving away and being in a different place with new things provided for me, that really and truly sense of possibility in my life. And so, yes, a lot went through, you know, I went through a lot, and the way, just to fast forward, not make it too long, the way I got to the United States is because I knew English. Mm-hmm. I was selected in my college for the work and travel program, which was a program where you get to go to the United States for a whole summer. And I did this several summers. And you could work and you could travel. And that's why it was called the work and travel. But also you did college classes in a college in the U.S. And so that was a fantastic experience. That's when I started to come every summer and just really immerse myself in the culture of the United States. But it wasn't until I married that I moved here. And I started my new life and started to have babies, which I have four of them. They're 21, 20, 10, and tomorrow my baby turns four.
Oh my goodness. And they are adorable. And spoiler alert, some of them have TEDx speeches too.
Yeah.
Which is incredible.
Yes, I'm very proud of them because they are contributors. They like to spread messages, to be messengers for good. And, you know, that's really, truly what else could I want?
Right.
And awesome humans who love other humans.
Your story is so inspiring. And I moved to the United States 24 years ago. And I grew up in poverty as well. Not as bad as you did, but I didn't have a lot. My mom had to work a lot to be able to pay, you know, the $300 mortgage that we had, which was a lot of money. And I knew that education, or at least that's the programming that I got, education was the only way out of it. And so I made it that, you know, I was the best at school. I got two engineering degrees and I figured out a way to get into a grad school program in the US. And I remember when I applied, my mom is like, how are you going to pay for that? I'm like, I will worry about that when I get in. Let me get in. Because my English wasn't very good. I am not very good with languages. So I had I knew like the vocabulary, I could read it, but I couldn't speak it. And so when I actually got accepted into this grad school program, I'm like, okay, now I really need to learn. And so I started like watching the news and, you know, practicing and all that. But when there is a will, there's a way. And you are a testament of that.
And so are you.
Thank you. Now, you didn't mention what I know of your story, one of the most traumatic things, which was your accident.
Yeah.
And how you have used that story to change so many lives. And I particularly love your fourth TEDx, which it was so impactful that I probably can, you know, resuscitate it right here, right? Like, because the message, the story, the connection, I was listening, I was like, oh my God, oh my God. And it's an inspiration because that is what I aspire to do. Have big shoes to fill here. But tell us a little bit about that and how you took that could have been a catastrophic story, but you could have just like, you know, chill and never come out of that, and how you took that into, you know, changing and transforming lives.
Thank you so much for saying that, Carmen. I really appreciate you. And you know, I adore you. So, So thank you for watching and for really, really listening, right? Because we always have a choice to glean learning and to immerse ourselves or to just let it be another entertaining thing that we do. So I really appreciate that you watch the talk, but that you really listen to the meaning and that you could feel compassion for my story. So, you know, I was already moved out in a new city and going to college and living my fairy tale life. And like I said, I had this new sense of possibility when I actually, you know, I'm walking down the street and I'm taking public transportation. I remember I felt so great because I actually had money for public transportation. Before, I had this amazing job as bilingual because languages actually were really and still are really easy for me. That's, you know, how we are different and yet the same as humans, right? And so I knew English and I knew Italian. So I got this amazing job because of my ability to speak these languages. And so now I was walking with pride, like I can actually take public transportation, don't have to walk miles and miles to school, which was my everyday, sometimes with like a banana in the stomach. Like I just really didn't have a lot, but I was making myself really push through this situation, and I was progressing so well. So I'm in the corner waiting for my public car, which means like an Uber, but like a bus. So it's like a bus route, but it's a car. And usually it's a beat up car, and you can tell because it's falling apart. And
with
so
with rust and
yes, exactly. And so I, you know, stopped the public car, gave him 2 pesos, which was like a lot of money back then. And now you can't even buy a mint with 2 pesos in the Dominican Republic. And then as I'm in there, he's like, no, I don't want your money. You're going to pay in a different way. And my heart just kind of stopped for a second. And I'm in this car and he's taking me to a different place. And because of my upbringing, I didn't even understand cars. I had been in cars just as a passenger after, you know, this was very new. I didn't even understand that how the locks all, you know, how the car, the doors were all locked. All of a sudden, I couldn't get out. I wanted to escape, but it was impossible. So after, you know, a lot of begging, he parked the car and I experienced the most horrific experiences of my life, even though I had been the victim of violence all my childhood. This was just a different level of hatred energy and torture and pain. And it was just so demoralizing, Carmen. Like I really felt like I was worthless all my life, but at this point, it was such a violent confirmation for me that really kind of broke my spirit, because I had come from this like just exciting moment where everything was happening for me to like, I'm back being victimized and I'm back being emotionally hurt and trapped. And he assured me that I wasn't going to come out of this alive. And for a moment, I felt grateful about that. For a moment, I was just thinking, well, that sounds like a good solution to what's happening right now. And so I was able to actually escape because he said, I'm going to take you somewhere else where I'm going to end it. And as he tried to turn the car on, it didn't work. And so in this moment, I felt a light and I felt something telling me, get out of the car, because I saw those locks come up and I had never seen anything like it. And I said, maybe I could. And I started walking out of the car and I dragged myself to this gas station. And I was half naked, covered in blood, just really weak. And when I got to the gas station, and this is very key for our listeners because it's not on the talk, but it's like the most important moment that I lived, was this woman comes out of her fancy car and I think she's gonna judge me. And I feel shame. And I feel like I don't want her to see me this way. I don't want anyone to see me this way. And she just hugged me. She just hugged me. She just wasn't silent. And I was just thinking, oh my gosh. I could feel her pearls. I could see how beautiful she was. Like if you're going to the opera, you know, it was just like so fancy. And her dress was covered in my blood. And she was caressing my, you know, the parts of my head where my hair used to be. And now, you know, I had bald spots and just feeling her touch. And it felt so warm and so magical. And that's what I like in validation, because after that, it was a nightmare. After that moment of calm and of love, and, you know, I think it was the first time in my life that I've ever felt safe with someone. Like, I don't have to explain anything. She doesn't care what I look like. She doesn't care what I, she's just loving me. And so after that, Carmen, it was like all this motivation that I received. And it was like, oh, thank goodness you survived. Oh, we're so grateful. Oh, look, the pregnancy test is negative. So let's rejoice, let's celebrate. Or you should just be grateful that you are alive. Or
it could have been worse.
This will pass. You're going to be grateful for this in the future. This is going to make you stronger. So fast forward to 6 months after that, I get in a car accident. I start to rebuild my life and kind of, you know, every day just living this nightmare and couldn't sleep and was afraid and guarded and just feeling so alone because nobody really understood it. And I get this car accident and I'm in a coma for 8 days. So in that coma, I could actually hear what everybody said. I could hear at first the doctors, like, there's nothing we can do for her. Or forget it, she's done. And just internalizing this and thinking again, well, that's awesome. I don't want to be here. This is too painful. This world is too painful and no one understands. And I know that many people that are listening have felt that way. And maybe some are feeling that way right now. Because pain is really the common thread of humanity. And something that you said, Carmen, like you said, I grew up in poverty. It wasn't as bad as you. And we compare pain. Mm-hmm. We minimize pain. We deny our pain and we dismiss our pain. And that's what society has taught us to do. Mm-hmm. When pain, everybody's in pain, in some kind of pain. It could be the pain of growth or the pain of trauma or the pain of regret, but there's always some kind of emotional pain that's going on. And so what happened in this coma is that I was hearing people's pain. And finally, I felt loved. I felt like they were with me. It took a physical injury, because physical injury, you can't ignore it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. See, your face is right there, yes.
Absolutely. It's like they couldn't ignore, like, and then they started to speak. They didn't think I was listening. Mm-hmm. And then they broke apart. Then they fell apart. I thought that these people were just like keeping me strong and they didn't care and they were just focusing on the gratitude. And now the words were coming out like, oh my goodness, she's been through so much. Oh my goodness, not this. Oh my goodness, like if only she could get a break. And all of those words, then they made me feel like somebody cared, like I wasn't alone. Mm-hmm. Some people even share things that they had never shared with me before about how they related to my pain. And so that's when I figured out that it's not motivation that helps us through pain, that it's validation. It's mm-hmm. actually the power of our presence, the power of our silence, the power of our being with someone and allowing them to grieve. Just like that woman at the gas station, I don't know her name, but every single day I think of her.
She was an angel.
Yeah. Every single day she inspires me to be who I want to be because she really, truly saw me in my pain.
So beautiful. I'm like speechless for once. And you're right, like this is what society teaches us to do, to be strong. Like I was raised to be strong, independent, and minimize my pain and my trauma and all the hurt and all the things. And I have put up with so much, especially in relationships, because it's not that bad, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Other people have it worst. And, you know, well, the other things are good, so don't complain so much and don't be so picky, and, you know, can be worse, you know. And it really takes, I read a quote, I think it's from Brené Brown in her book, that she said that a lot of people live in disappointment for being afraid of being disappointed. And I was like,
yeah,
oh my God. Yes, exactly. Like the fear of just exposing the pain and being vulnerable.
Yeah.
Like, I know for me, one of my biggest fears is vulnerability, not mm-hmm. in being seen, but in being seen to myself.
Yes. Right? Yes.
And yeah. Your story and what you're doing, it's so amazing. And I am so glad and so grateful that, you know, our life has crossed, and mm-hmm. I can, you know, have your inspiration and mm-hmm. in so many areas. And
Thank you.
I am so, I am 100% sure that our audience are speechless right now, but also just having a new light on what does it mean to have pain, and, you know, and start validating our own pain and the pain of those around us, because it's so comfortable to want to put that Band-Aid and want to move on.
Yeah. Well, you know, it starts with being comfortable with our own pain and to call it pain. And when I say pain, is any aspect of grief, because for boys, for example, they are told, don't cry,
mm-hmm.
right? For girls, is don't be angry. So it's not only allowing us to grieve with our tears, with our, like you said, complaining, that's what they call it, right? Like whether we whine and complain and we act like a victim or something like that. But there's also that societal expectation that with women, we don't ruffle the feathers, we don't stir the bow, that mm-hmm. we don't stand up for ourselves because it's seen as anger. Mm-hmm. And so one thing that I like to say that it's the basic foundation for validation is to understand that our emotions are messengers. They're not positive. They're not negative. Like every time I see that word negative emotion or negative feelings, I cringe because our emotions are simply messengers that are telling us what's going on inside of us. Mm-hmm. So there's this thing that I call motivational shame, which is what you express, like it's not that bad. Others have it worse. It's not coming from an ill place. It's coming from a place of, I don't want you to feel this pain. I want you to really have a different perspective. But guess what? That perspective, I'm going to get it from your support. Mm-hmm. And this is what it looks like. You know, Carmen, I tell you that I'm having maybe suicidal thoughts. Maybe I tell you that and you say, oh, but you have four beautiful girls. They need you. And maybe the reason I'm having suicidal thoughts is because I think they need me too much.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So we never know in our motivation when we're like really inflicting shame. Maybe what I'm thinking about is that they need me, but I can never be enough for them. So you're really reinforcing that belief when you're trying to motivate me. Now, what if you, Carmen, said, what are those thoughts telling you? Tell me more, like, why do you feel this way? What are the voices in your head telling you about that? what is the pain that you have that tells you that you need to do that to end it? So basically bringing curiosity. And I always say, hold them and hold your tongue. Hold them and hold your tongue. Allow them to feel how they feel. Allow them to feel angry, to feel frustrated, to feel disappointed, to feel depressed. Allow them to feel what they're feeling and then ask or just be there, like the woman at the gas station. It wasn't like, what happened to you? She didn't even ask me if you're okay, if I'm okay. Because guess what? It's obvious.
Right, right.
You know, and we tend to do that. Like, because what do we want to hear when we ask someone that they're okay? We want to say yes. Or I am okay, or I'll be okay. Or you're going to assure me you'll be okay. Mm-hmm. And we are not okay. We are not okay. When my four-year-old, she's turning four tomorrow, when she cries and she says, Mommy, the toy is not working, and she's crying, I don't want to say, don't cry. We want to say that. We want to say, don't cry. Oh, don't cry, honey. It sounds so loving. It sounds so nurturing. But instead, it's like, oh, no wonder you're in pain. Mm-hmm. No wonder you're crying. Now I understand why you're crying. And so it's a completely different space where we don't compare our pain, where we don't downplay our pain. And when we do that for our own selves, then we will feel more comfortable with somebody else's pain.
That absolutely. I know it's taking me a long time to allow myself to feel pain. But just recently, you know, I was going through some personal things and I literally said, I am going to feel like crap and it's going to be okay. And I'm going to cry and I'm going to be in bed and I'm going to shower and I'm going to cancel all my appointments and it's going to be okay. And I allowed myself to do that.
I love that. Love it.
But, you know, 3 years ago, that would never have happened. Because my programming said that I had to be strong. I was Wonder Woman, Superwoman, all those, you know, superheroes. Linda Carter, my best, you know, love her, right? When I was growing up. Yeah.
I'm strong. I gotta be. She's like
Nina. I used to play that. Or Cheera.
Oh, yeah.
Oh my God. This is actually one of, I would say, the most transformational episode interview I've had here in the podcast. And wow.
Well, so, I would say something though.
Yeah.
Is that okay?
Yes.
Because you said I was programmed to be strong. And I think that's such a, you know, I would say, misconception or a myth that we think that not feeling pain is strength or maybe putting up with pain. Mm-hmm. And so I know that this is what you meant, is that, and I want to highlight it for the audience, that being strong is not putting up with pain or saying we're not in pain, is actually asking for help.
Yeah, it took me a long time to realize that asking for help was actually showing my strength. But I couldn't fathom to allow other people to see that I couldn't do it all. Mm-hmm. And you know, and I moved here, all my family's back home, I don't have a lot of friends, and then we moved to Alaska, and here I am, a corporate executive, raising kids, didn't have a lot of help from, you know, partners. And so I was the mom, the teacher, the executive. I have a kid with disabilities. I mean, it was a lot, but I didn't know how to ask for help, because you said boys are told not to cry. I was told not to cry. Mm-hmm. Right. So I, you know, crying meant I was going to get spanked for crying. So I could cry for a reason.
Yes.
Right. So I wasn't allowed to cry, and I had an abusive stepdad. So I had to be the protector of me and my brother. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, this is what I'm saying. I was programmed by condition to be strong and to be, you know, a fortress where nothing can come inside of me. And yeah, I didn't know how to ask for help, and I needed help. I really needed help. And now I'm like, you know, yes, I cannot do it alone. Please help me.
Yeah, because that's your strength. That's our strength when we are courageous. Mm-hmm. Strength is shown when you actually feel like you can't do it. And you find the resources, whether within yourself or in your community, to make that happen. Strength is not being, you know, infallible or like you said, a superhero. It's really having those, that resourcefulness. And one thing that that word strength also triggered for me was that a lot of times people will say, what doesn't kill you make you stronger. Mm-hmm. And I just, my blood boils when I think because, you know, I could look at this person that, you know, kidnapped me in this car. And, you know, all of the things that he said, all of the things that he did. And I refuse, and maybe it's the defiant, you know, energy in me. I refuse to say, because of him, I am stronger. Mm-hmm. It is not true. I am stronger because of me. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It was
response.
Yes. It was 19-year-old Elena, just like little Carmen, protecting her brother, right? It was 19-year-old Elena that I have to thank for that. She made me stronger because she was able to find hope in the darkest places. She was able to look for ways, be discerning, be aware, be open to possibilities in the middle of trash, in the middle of a car where you know, you're pretty much doomed. And wherever, you know, I was, even in that coma, saying, okay, I want to live because I had to make that choice. It is that person that I have to thank for who I am today, not the people who hurt me. Just like your stepfather didn't make you stronger. No, he didn't. He hurt you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's what he did. There's nothing to thank. Thank Carmen. Thank Elena. Thank yourself, whoever you are, for your ability to turn your greatest adversity into the greatest breakthrough.
Beautiful. I cannot think of a better way to end this episode. Oh, we have a little visitor. It's okay. She can come say hi.
Look.
We are real here. We all know, you know, we have kids, we have lives, we have, you know, beautiful things happening. So it's a beautiful way to end the episode. And of course, I want everyone to go and connect with you. And I know that they can find you at The Positive Mom in every social media channel. And your website is thepositivemom.com.
That's correct.
Yes. And please go watch the TEDx talks from Elena because they are amazing. You are going to love them. I don't know that the fourth one is live yet. I got a preview. I got a special preview myself. So honored to that. But as soon as that one is out, you should go watch it. And she talks about impact and intention. And that, I mean, like I'm telling you, I can tell you the whole thing because it was so interesting. So it really touched me. And so anything else you want to do just to close the show with like a little pretty bow?
Well, I think, you know, when we think about validation, there are two aspects that I want to say. Allowing your feelings and acknowledging your feelings. And so I have a three-step practice really quick. It's see, sense, and say. Mm-hmm. And it's just 2 minutes every day so that you can be comfortable with your own pain, but also comfortable with somebody else's pain. First, you know, recall something painful or stressful, a memory, an experience, or thought. Then sense it in your body, because that's when you're going to find it and really process it. Mm-hmm. And then say is for saying something validating to yourself. Like, Elaina, oh, that was so hard. Oh, Elaina, that was not your fault. Or, oh, Elaina, of course you feel that way. And then that is going to get you in the habit of really validating your pain. And it takes 2 minutes, because it's 90 seconds for any emotion to process. As science has proven that. Mm-hmm. And then just 30 seconds saying a validating statement to yourself, just to acknowledge that it was hard, that it is difficult, that it's okay to cry, or it's okay to be angry. And as you do that every day, you validate yourself, then you become a safe space to validate others.
That's beautiful. And yes, the pain and the traumas get stored in the body. People think they get stored in the mind, but actually they get stored in the body. So I love that, you know, recall it, but then feel it. Where in your body stuck? Yeah. And with the vibration of your voice, you can move it out. Yes. So that's beautiful. Beautiful. Yeah. Oh my God. Thank you so much, Elaina, for being here with us today. This is, I'm telling you, I was looking forward to this the entire week.
Thank you. It was great for me. And I'm just honored to see you and to, you know, to honor who you are, but also who you've been and everything that you've overcome.
Likewise. Thank you so much. And I'll see you guys next week. Don't forget to go follow Elaina in social media, and because you're going to be in for a treat. This is just a preview of everything you're going to get from her. So love you. See you next week. Bye-bye.